Welcome to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for listening this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is out this week. Well, new laws often face court challenges, but nothing like the incredible outburst of litigation that we're seeing right now here in Florida. After the state legislature and the governor passed controversial measures on voting in the state, and also how people can legally protest here, a deluge of lawsuits followed. There are complaints challenging the constitutionality of Florida's contentious new elections law. There's a federal lawsuit against a new law that takes aim at demonstrations that turn violent. A bill banning transgender girls from playing sports is also seen as very likely to draw lawsuits. And as lawmakers return to Tallahassee next week for a special session focused on gambling, the push to okay sports betting likely will go to court too. It all adds up to a remarkable legal pushback from the work of the recent legislative session in Tallahassee. To discuss all this, we're pleased to welcome Charles Talley Wells, retired Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice. Judge Wells, a pleasure. Thanks for appearing with us here on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you very much, Melissa. I'm glad to be back with you.
Great to have you. Great to have you and your insights. We're also pleased to add to the discussion A.G. Gankarski, reporter with Florida Politics. Hi, A.G. Good to have you.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me on again.
And as we talk about this incredible spate of lawsuits filed against new Florida laws, we want to hear from you. What do you think about the measures passed by lawmakers in Tallahassee this spring and the legal challenges they're already facing? Voting and elections, protest in the state. Those are the two big ones, but other topics too. Give us a call here on the Roundup, the number 305-995-1800. Call us from wherever you are in the state. We're live across Florida. Tweet us at Florida Roundup. Well, let's begin with the lawsuits filed against the state's new elections law. Within minutes of that law being signed by the governor, and by the way, he did that live on Fox News and kept out other media outlets from that bill signing, the League of Women Voters of Florida said it was joining a lawsuit that included a coalition of groups. A judge, they're suing the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, all of the county supervisors of elections, saying that the new law imposes too many hurdles for voters, like restrictions on drop boxes and the annual renewal of voting by mail ballot requests. You can't even offer food and water now to voters waiting in line. So, Judge Wells, let's begin with you. What are your thoughts about the legal arguments these groups are making?
Well, I think that there is a strong legal case to be made concerning the problems that are going to be arise out of the restrictions on voting that the legislature passed in this session. I think that we have never had a problem of fraud in voting in Florida. And I've been observing Florida elections and participating in Florida elections since the 1950s. And I can say that even in the situation we had in 2000 with the presidential election, we didn't have any problem with fraud. We wanted people, and we should still want every eligible person to vote. And I think that the laws that the legislature passed this session are of concern because they appear to be a restriction on voting and put up unnecessary hurdles.
And do you think they can make that argument in court?
I definitely think they can. And I think that the Florida Supreme Court has a series of cases which explain that there cannot be unnecessary restrictions that inhibit voting in Florida. In fact, in the Bush v. Gore series of cases, the Florida Supreme Court pointed to the fact that the very first article of the Florida Constitution, which is the bedrock law of Florida, says that all political power is inherent in the people, and construed that the framers began the Constitution with a declaration that all political power inheres in the people, and only they, the people, may decide how and when that power may be exercised, and that the legislature may enact laws regulating the process, but those laws are valid only if they impose no unreasonable or unnecessary restraints. The Florida Supreme Court's very clear on the fact that there cannot be unnecessary, and I've read this law, and it appears to me that there are unnecessary impediments to voting and having votes counted.
With Judge Wells, with more conservative justices now appointed to the state's high court, could that change the way these arguments might be received?
Well, certainly there could be a change because the court has changed since the Bush v. Gore cases in 2000. But I have to believe and have faith that the court, Supreme Court of Florida, is going to continue to follow the law and apply the Florida Constitution. And so the answer to your question is it could change, but I'm very hopeful that it will not.
It's 305-995-1800 to join us here on the Florida Roundup. A.G. Gankarski, Florida Politics. Let's talk about the new elections law in Florida. We need to point out that this law was filed in response to lies told by former President Trump about supposed election fraud that did not exist in this state. Laws making it harder to vote were pushed this year in legislatures across the country based on what's now known as the big lie that the 2020 election was stolen. What about that, the idea of enshrining into law voting restrictions based on falsehoods about the election?
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount of revisionist history that, you know, comes to the genesis of this law, because after the November election, the governor talked about what a clean election it was. We knew who won 3 hours after the final vote was cast. We're a model for the rest of the country, et cetera.
Right, right.
You know, and Trump won the state. But, you know, because of that, you know, this law looks like, well, what are we really reacting to? And this is what Democrats kept bringing up in the legislature. Why are we doing this? We had a good election. And, you know, as it's been reported, Mother Jones reported that the Heritage Foundation had model legislation like this in Georgia, here, Texas, a few other states. And the sales job was always the same. The sales job was push it in the legislature. In Georgia, when Brian Kemp signed that law, he was told to sign it immediately because if he didn't, he'd look weak. And, you know, there's a reason this governor signed it on Fox and Friends. It was performative political theater for the national base, for his donors, for the national views of the world. And, you know, this governor's got one eye on the White House. And all this legislation we're talking about today has to be looked at in that context.
Right. And we've talked about that on this show before. And some of the other laws that have passed, you could look at those through that same lens. We'll get to the anti-protest law in a moment. But AG, yes, as you mentioned, a conservative group, Heritage Action, did play a key role in crafting these types of voting restrictions in states like Florida and Georgia. The group told their donors just last month that they are actually drafting the bills for state legislatures, but tried to give it the look of a grassroots effort. It was not. This was a coordinated effort across the country to restrict voting.
Right. And I mean, here in Florida, the guy who carried it in the House, Blaise Ingolia, you know, he's very connected, a former Republican Party chair. And, you know, just batting down these arguments from Democrats. And, you know, that's basically who you're getting. You're not getting some lightweight. You're getting somebody who can play the game. And, you know, the game is basically to take the slings and arrows, get the thing through, hazard all the amendments, say that any change to it's unfriendly, and you push the product out, and then you create like a photo op signing on Fox and Friends. You know, the media was blocked out of that. And, you know, the answer was, well, it was on national television. And, you know, that's the governor basically, you know, rather than take questions from the Florida press on this bill, he took questions from Brian Kilmeade and the gang on the couch. And again, you know, that's posturing. I don't think they care if it holds up or not. I think the idea is basically to create culture war fights that are litigated and basically to gum up the works and to try to keep the Republican majority going for one more decade, even though demographics dictate against it, really.
Let's go to your calls now here on the Florida Roundup. We're talking about lawsuits filed in response to legislation that has become law in Florida, a new law around voting. In a moment, we'll talk about a new law about protesting. Our guests this hour are Charles Talley Wells, retired Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice, and A.G. Gankarski, reporter with Florida Politics. And you, your thoughts. Call us up now, 305-995-1800, to join the show. Robbie in Jacksonville is with us. Hey, Robbie, thanks for your call. Go ahead. Robbie, are you still there? Okay, as we try to connect him, his question, Judge Wells, was, how likely is it that these lawsuits can even make a difference? Judge Wells, take us through the legal process. Let's begin with the elections lawsuits. As I mentioned, a coalition of groups has sued over the elections law.
Well, I think these laws can make these lawsuits about the election law can make a real difference, because I think that it's necessary to lay out the issues that these laws present for the courts. And this is a matter now of state law. It's not a matter of federal law as to the right to vote in Florida. And as I said earlier, I have every confidence that the Florida Constitution is going to be enforced. And the Florida Constitution provides for a right of suffrage that cannot be denied by the legislature through law, because it's part of the bedrock law of Florida and the Florida Constitution. So I think to enforce the Constitution is what lawsuits need to do, especially when it comes to the right of suffrage.
You know,
the right to vote.
Sure. And the 2020 election itself was litigated. Dozens of lawsuits were brought. Virtually all of them were thrown out. These lawsuits contended that the election was somehow not free or fair. The judiciary, Judge, performed its role in this process, taking an independent look at the evidence or the lack of it. How much confidence do you have as a retired jurist in this branch of our government to settle these types of disputes over voting and elections, which are becoming more and more bitter and contentious all the time in this country, for obvious reasons? Look at the insurrection we saw on January 6th in Washington.
Well, I think we have to depend upon the courts to enforce the Constitution, both the United States Constitution and the state Constitution. And the state Constitution, as I've repeatedly said now, has a very strict view of voting, and that the right to vote is something that has got to be protected by, and the courts are the place to protect it. So I have confidence that the courts will step in and protect the right to vote as the most fundamental vote we have, right we have in this democracy.
And let us know your thoughts about Florida's new elections law and the lawsuits filed against it. That's our topic right now here on the show. In a moment here on the Florida Roundup, we'll talk about some other legal pushback to other new Florida laws. 305-995-1800. Bill is calling in from Pensacola. Hey, Bill, go ahead. I don't know what's going on with our phone lines today, but here's what Bill, are you there? Well, what he wanted to ask was that Even President Trump, AG, said that Florida had a secure election. So why the need for this legislation in Florida? You sort of already answered that question, AG, but if you could expand on that a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a mechanical need for the legislation. And in the Senate, where the debate had this tragicomic quality at times, Senator Dennis Baxley said he was going to make sure that nothing bad happened. Basically, so you have a perfect election, you want to make sure that nothing bad happened past it. And that's kind of where this was. It's like you're taking safeguards to protect against things that are cures, that are problems that we don't have. It's the old, going to search for, a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. And that's really the question. So you've got this idea of monitored drop boxes, you create new restrictions on vote by mail. And I think in the end, the activists, the people, registering people to vote, they're going to find ways around this. So I don't know even how effective this is going to be, beyond the constitutional measures that the justice brings up. I think in the end, the demographic game basically mitigates against the stuff working.
Certainly, we've seen that in Florida as in many other states. Now, that said, President Trump in Florida did garner bigger vote tallies from non-white voters in 2020 than he did in 2016. That's just one wrinkle I wanted to add to your comment. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Trump had a uniquely effective campaign in Florida. He really played South Florida well. He understood how to speak to the men down there specifically, the machismo kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that played for him. And the Florida Democratic Party, of course, is a gang that can't shoot straight. But, as a state grows, it's going to look more like California. It's going to look more purple. And, this is the game that Republicans play. The reason they have to keep gumming up the works is because demographics dictate that in the end they will lose. And, once you get past the whole, Donald Trump versus Liz Cheney discussion, you've got a party that basically caters to aging white people. And this is a country that is getting younger, that's getting more diverse, and is expecting more from government than the Republican Party's advocated for decades.
Let's take one more call before the break. It's Zubin in Davie, Florida. Zubin, go ahead.
Go ahead. Hi, good afternoon. I think just as a lay voter, I'm incredibly frustrated by some of the things that I've read in the bill. And especially when it comes to the mail-in ballots. And I wanted to ask the former Chief Justice, what portions are what would be the legal arguments to overturning, especially the mail-in ballot provision?
Sure.
Where the drop-off
and not to cut you off, we've got 15 seconds to answer that, Judge. So we might have to ask you to hold your thought on that caller's question until we come back. It's the Florida Roundup. Line up your calls at 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup. We are talking voting on the show. Judge, do you want to answer his question very quickly?
Yes. I would put that in the category of an unreasonable or unnecessary restraint on the vote. And that is specifically what the Florida Supreme Court in a series of decisions now have said you cannot do through legislation.
And more of this conversation to come. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is out this week, and we're continuing the conversation now on a deluge of lawsuits that have been filed challenging new laws in Florida. Our guest this hour, Charles Wells, retired Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice, A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics, and lots of calls. Let's begin with Victor in Fort Lauderdale as we talk about the new elections law in the state. Victor, you like the law. Is that right?
I do. Hi. Thanks for picking the call.
Sure.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I don't see how are the restrictions bad if we want a good, believable vote result. How are they restricted? I don't understand this. I'm totally confused. Why can't we have an election day that's just an election day? Why do we need mail-in ballots that are so, even on the Democrat side for years, been saying that that's the most susceptible the corruption. That's my problem, my question.
Victor, thanks for your call. Judge Wells, you know, we've had mail-in voting in Florida for a long time, and it actually was pioneered by the Republican Party. There has been no documented widespread fraud around mail-in ballots. But if you could you answer Victor's question? Because I do think he's like a lot of voters in that he doesn't necessarily have confidence in the process.
The reason that I believe that this is restrictive is because it places more requirements in order to vote by mail. Also, it places severe restraint on drop boxes, and people who work and people who are not available to vote in person for various reasons need these avenues to vote, and they need to be as easy as possible. If there's no reason to restrict it when we have not had any fraud, there is every reason to promote it because it promotes more people participating in our democracy.
305-995-1800. Michael is on the line from Stuart, Florida. Hello, Michael. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi. What are your thoughts about the elections law?
Well, as a Republican myself, I'm actually against the law. And I feel it's exactly what the gentleman said, that there should be any restriction based on how you want to cast your vote for numerous reasons. I'm kind of wondering if this is also a way to limit a potential switch of parties that might have happened since the January insurrection, because I don't believe we've had an election in Florida, especially with the governor's seat coming up soon since the insurrection. And I'm wondering if there's a fear that a lot of Republicans might have switched over to the Democratic Party, and this is a way to limit that.
Thanks for those thoughts. AG, what about that? I do believe a poll was put out in the state recently showing that the majority of voters, Republicans and Democrats, oppose these kinds of restrictions on voting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much that poll really means. I mean, it's whether they oppose them or not, they're here pending the legal challenges. Regarding the insurrection motif, I think for Republicans that has diminishing returns. I mean, we saw a lot of shock in January and February regarding what was happening regarding corporate donors and recording voters. But, you know, as Joe Biden has, you know, matured into the presidency a little bit, you know, we're discussing things that are happening now. And I mean, Republicans, by and large, are trying to change the subject. I think that's why they pushed Liz Cheney to the side ultimately. I mean, that discussion was inconvenient for them. So they're looking at the 2022 cycle, and, you know, they're looking at critiquing Biden's America. I mean, that's the midterm election argument always for the opposition party. So I don't know if there's going to be any more movement from, you know, Republicans to the Democratic Party based on what happened January 6th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's a tweet from a listener. I have voted in Florida since 2002. I liked the mail ballot system where you could request multiple ballots. I believe the governor broke a good system, he says. Lisa calling from Miami. Hello, Lisa. You're on the Florida Roundup. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was in line 9 hours in North Miami at the North Miami Library for Obama's second election. I had no idea that I would be in line 9 hours. And about the fourth hour, we're still a line wrapped around the library. And it was volunteers from the Democratic Party. And this is a Democratic area that began bringing us food and water. And so 9 hours later, we're still in line, and they saved us. Now, I'm type 1 diabetic. This was dangerous. And without the food and water that was brought to us, I would have had to leave and wouldn't have been able to vote because I've never been in line 9 hours to vote. And it was so bad that by the time they called the election, Obama won, there were still people in line.
Yeah, I remember that night. So I guess then you don't like the provision of the law that bans giving food or water to voters. Yes?
Right. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that so much, Lisa. Charles Wells, a retired Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice. That is a provision of the new Florida law. It certainly got a lot of attention, a similar provision up in Georgia. And as we've been pointing out, these laws were put into legislatures through the efforts of a conservative group, Heritage Action. As a retired jurist, that part of the law has gotten a lot of attention. Banning giving out water to people standing in long lines under the hot sun. What about how that piece of it is likely to fare as all of these court challenges make their way?
Well, I think that the courts will not look favorably on that type of restriction. And I think that the listener just brought up a significant problem with trying to do that type of thing is that we've got such a wide variety of people that have a right to vote that bring to it all sorts of issues and problems, and that what we need is to have laws that will help and not hinder their casting their votes. And that provision, as well as these provisions on drop boxes and the others that we've discussed, are problems that are created by the law for voting, and that is the central problem with this whole legislation.
And as we talk about this law, we also want to bring in the discussion about legal challenges to another law that got a lot of attention this legislative session. This new law in Florida takes aim at demonstrations that turn violent. A federal lawsuit filed Tuesday says the law is racially motivated and will silence activists wanting to speak out against police misconduct and other concerns facing their communities. We're going to talk about this new law as well. And let's also make the point that the legislature focused on these hot-button issues, AG, in the middle of a pandemic when people were dying, people couldn't get unemployment. And these were the hallmark pieces of legislation that came out of the session in Tallahassee. That, in addition to all of the legal pushback, I think is something we need to at least make mention of.
Yeah, I mean, I see your point. I would say also they had a really fat budget this year. It was the first budget that was over $100 million. So there was the idea of a rising economic tide lifting boats. But definitely the message of legislation like this was a sop to the right. They were able to get away with it in part because the Capitol was largely closed. So people who wanted to comment on, say, the anti-riot bill or the election law changes bill, they had to do so from the Tucker Center in Tallahassee, not from the committee room. You had a divorce of the people in the process this year because of the pandemic. But I think in the end, these things would have happened anyway, because you're not doing it in an election year. You've got redistricting coming up in 2022, for the 2022 session. So when else do you do this stuff? You've got a very ambitious governor who's, being talked up as the next Donald Trump. All of these things mitigate toward pushing that conservative agenda and, setting up a model to where, people can say with a straight face, make America Florida. People who live here may think that's a dubious proposition, but that's what a lot of people on the right are saying, and that's not just here, but it's all around the country.
And as AG talks about the politics of this, Judge Wells, what about this federal lawsuit against the new law that brings down severe penalties against demonstrators that turn violent if you're at a protest and you're peaceful, if there's even a hint of violence anywhere, anyone who's present could theoretically be charged with a felony, even if they don't become violent themselves. Can this federal lawsuit, in your legal estimation, make the case that this new statute is too extreme?
It certainly appears to me to have a problem with the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. I think it also has a problem with the Declaration of Rights and the Florida Constitution. But I believe that it first runs directly into the Amendment 1, which says Congress shall make no law and the legislature shall make no law respecting the right to peacefully to assemble. And it seems to me that what this legislature was bent to do was to restrict these constitutional rights. We've been talking about with voting, and it's a similar problem with the First Amendment to the United States Constitution with the assembly law.
We're talking about legal challenges to recent controversial laws passed by the Florida legislature this year. And we want your calls here on the Florida Roundup. It's 305-995-1800 to join the conversation. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup as we talk with Judge Charles Wells, retired Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court, and A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. We'll go to a few more calls in a moment. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. So, Judge, can you recall this much litigation by this many groups after a legislative session? We're also likely to see litigation against a law banning transgender girls from participating in sports. If that becomes enacted, we are likely to see legislation about sports betting when they go back into special session, looking at gambling. You've seen a lot of legislatures come and go. How much does this whole season stand out to you?
I don't recall in the whole period of time that I've been observing the legislature there to be that many cases that breach constitutional norms. It has been usual that the litigation comes out of there being some issue with the budget, or there being, but not these issues that have to do with basic constitutional rights in this form. I just don't recall a legislative session that grew this many legal problems.
It's 305-995-1800 to join the Florida Roundup statewide. JC is calling from Miami. Hi, JC. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, what can I as an individual do to change these bad laws, number one? And number two, why can't they, how can we change the police so that they do not have immunity? They're the only people in the country that have immunity against any kind of prosecution. Why is that?
Thanks for that. Well, you know, qualified immunity for law enforcement is a whole other conversation that we could spend the whole hour on, JC. There were a number of reasons why police enjoy such broad protections. Certainly they are controversial. A.G. Gankarski, voters like JC, they're not necessarily very happy with what the legislature has been doing. These are divisive measures. People can always vote in the next election for another candidate if they don't like what their representative has been doing. That said, of course, this state, like many others, is gerrymandered. And your vote doesn't always have the power and the impact you might want it to have.
Right. It's gerrymandered. It's only going to be more gerrymandered. It's going to basically a 2-to-1 spread in the House. The Senate is you know, close to two-thirds majority for Republicans. It could swing that way. So basically, the recourse that Democrats and people who oppose the DeSantis agenda have is to unite behind a candidate for governor and hope that candidate serves as a block against some of the worst ideas of the legislature. Now, that's easier said than done, of course, because DeSantis is over 50% in poll after poll against whoever might be running as a Democrat. But, you know, really, I think until Democrats get their political operation together, they're going to be prey to more of this stuff, because Republicans are going to dominate Tallahassee for the next decade. And the only suspense is really the governor's mansion. And that's going to be tough because DeSantis and Rubio will be running together.
Right.
And Rubio is really strong statewide.
With less than a minute left, Judge Wells, let's give you the last word. Your final thoughts about these lawsuits that have been filed.
Well, I believe that they have set up a series of cases that are going to have to be resolved at the Florida Supreme Court level, especially having to do with voting. The federal courts may very well dispense with the anti-riot law under the First Amendment. But to me, this is a very troubling development in Florida. And I hope that the person that called from Miami will go to work to get people into the Florida legislature that are going to have more of a historic view.
And we'll have to thank you so much, Charles Wells, retired Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice and A.G. Gankarski. Thank you, guys. In a moment, panic buying this week at the pump. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is out this week. Well, did you have trouble filling up your tank this week? Panic buying of gas across the Southeast led to long lines, sharp words, and empty pumps for thousands of unhappy drivers here in Florida and other states, too. The crazy thing is, it was a completely man-made crisis. It started with a ransomware attack on one of the nation's largest gas suppliers, Colonial Pipeline. That led the company to shut down its pipeline connecting Texas all the way up to New Jersey. And then we just saw a panic. It led drivers to fill up out of fear the country was going to run out of gas. The governor declared a state of emergency Tuesday, saying the disruption of the pipeline posed a significant and immediate threat to fuel delivery in Florida.
We're relaxing restrictions in terms of the weight to be able to get more fuel trucks in to the parts of Florida that need more fuel. But ultimately, we really do need the federal government to step up and help. And, you know, we don't want to see these long gas lines persist throughout the northern part of our state.
Now, the good news is Colonial restarted operations Wednesday, and their cybersecurity consultants have been working to secure their servers. They decided not to pay a ransom demanded by foreign hackers. So, Florida, did you have a hard time finding gas this week? Did you get into a long line to make sure you didn't have an empty tank? Let us know your thoughts about all of this at 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup. For more on this, we're pleased to welcome Ned Bowman, Executive Director at the Florida Petroleum Marketers Association. Hi, Ned.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Let me play this quickly for you. Earlier this week, a spokesman for AAA, Mark Jenkins, had this message for consumers.
90% of gasoline here in Florida sails in on a cargo ship through our ports. When people race out to the pump and they top off their tanks and they fill up extra cans, all that does is create a supply problem.
So that had to have been frustrating for you, Ned, because as he pointed out, most of Florida's gas comes in through the ports, not through that pipeline.
Yeah, we have 3% of our fuel through Bainbridge, Georgia, which feeds down into the Tallahassee market. And Tallahassee's had its challenges, but we've been bringing fuel in from Jacksonville, which is a water port. We were bringing in from Tampa, Niceville, Freeport. So we've been able to get fuel in. The issue is the trucking and how far it is from Tallahassee. But when you get gasoline runs down in Miami, when 100% of the fuel from Miami comes out of Everglades. It's panic buying. It just everybody panics. We're not in a hurricane. We're not evacuating people. People aren't traveling. So it works it's very difficult to deal with that. We've been working with the governor and his staff at the Emergency Operations Center since Friday when we learned that the Colonial Pipeline went down, and to try to get weights to try to help alleviate what we thought would be coming, and it came.
And do you feel that those efforts helped and helped resolve the crisis quickly?
Yeah, it does. When you do the weights for the truckers, and the truckers in the hours of service, they can drive longer. They can carry more fuel. So if you're doing 1,500 loads a day, that means you're putting another 1.5 million gallons of fuel into the gas stations. And that you need as soon as possible. And I commend, the governor and the emergency operation people have been through this with hurricanes. So it's nothing new to them. So they understand what needs to be done. Florida is a 12 billion gallon market. So you've got 7,000 convenience stores that sell the gasoline. So it's a big market. It's the third biggest in the country. But we only get 3% of our fuel off of the pipeline in Bainbridge.
Okay, this is new. I want to ask you about this. A moment ago, I mentioned that they were opting at first not to pay the hackers ransom, Colonial Pipeline, that is. They supply nearly 50% of fuel along the East Coast. So this ransomware attack showed how vulnerable our vital industries can be. CNN is reporting that Colonial Pipeline did pay the ransomware group that carried out this cyber attack. They had demanded nearly $5 million, Bloomberg first reporting this ransom payment. So obviously, we all need gas. We're going to need it for some time to come. We're not all going to electric cars tomorrow. How can we better defend this industry against these kinds of cyber attacks?
The industry's been hit with cyber attacks for a long time. And it's just, you have to be smart. You can't open emails. You can't, do that. And you have to have the right security systems. We work with Homeland Security on their cyber group with our members, and they're constantly passing information up and offering free services to go in and look at everybody's system. And we've done that. And so there is a strong defense for that, but people have to be smart also. And with Colonial, my understanding, and I don't know this for a fact, but the rumor was that somebody opened up an email that encrypted the system. So that's where you have to be careful with it. I just thank God it wasn't the power grid for the state of Florida. If the power went out, then we get really big problems.
Sure. Alan is calling from Tallahassee. Hi, Alan. Did you have any trouble with gas?
Hey. No, not really. Most of all the stations were open, but I watched the news. I had to take off and go from Frostburg to Jacksonville, from Jacksonville off to Tallahassee. So I had to, and I'm going into the red zone, the north end of the state, where, there could be possible fuel shortages. So I had to fill up with extra tanks before I left, just in case. I did end up in an area because it was spotty information, but I'm happy to say that most all the places I stopped all had fuel and good prices too. I stopped at Bucky's. Bucky's was only like $2.70 a gallon, $2.79 a gallon, and they had everything. So I was happy so far, and I just took my extra fuel tanks and filled up my tanks. So. Instead of hauling fuel, I have empty cans. I don't have to worry about spillage.
Very good, Alan. Be safe. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. As we talk about the panic buying at the pump this week, here's a tweet from one listener. I heard there were still people lining up at pumps in the Tampa area. Another tweet from another listener, I had no problem getting gas in Cape Canaveral. Ned Bowman, we're coming up on the Memorial Day holiday. Lots of people are planning to hit the road. What are your thoughts about how the gas supply prices will look by then?
I think the supply is fine in Florida. As I said, the ports are well supplied. The ships are coming in on schedule, the barges that are dropping off the fuel. The issue we're having is struggling with is the truckers. We do have a trucking shortage in the state of Florida. So we're trying to get these stations refilled as fast as possible. Yeah, Memorial Day is coming, but I think we're more worried about hurricane season coming up when we do evacuations. You know, during Irma, we evacuated 6.8 million people, and we had plenty of fuel. So that gives you how good that Florida is with moving fuel around the state. But with the trucking shortage and hurricane season, it is something to be concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Devron calling from Delray Beach. Devron, how are you? Go ahead.
I'm great. How are you?
All right. Did you have trouble getting gas?
I had to go to three different gas stations before I finally found gas. So it wasn't that bad because they were kind of close together. But I was worried for a second.
Sure. I think a lot of people had anxiety about this. Ned, as you mentioned, the panic is really what drove it. There were gas stations in Florida, in several parts of Florida, that had never been supplied by the Colonial Pipeline, just out of fuel altogether. Florida wasn't the only state to declare a state of emergency. And so as we do head into storm season, I think, as you mentioned, that's a much bigger concern than the Memorial Day holiday. And also just the fact that there are bad actors outside our borders that seek to destabilize us this way, seek to disrupt us through cyber attacks. That's a worrisome thing to watch happen that we all saw the impacts of literally with our own vehicles.
Yeah, it's a very troubling, concerning issue when you have characters from around the world that aren't too friendly to the United States putting viruses and systems inside our systems to disrupt us. As you saw, the Colonial Pipeline down 45% of the fuel up the East Coast. Virginia and North Carolina and South Carolina, it's difficult. You have to be prepared. And like I said, Homeland Security does offer a free service for going through your systems to make sure that they're well. And a lot of our members use them to do that, to make sure that they're not encrypted.
Mm-hmm. And any other thoughts about how you plan to manage this type of thing if it should happen again? What was the biggest thing that the state learned from this experience?
I think it's the information that you put out, and the media has to do the right information to get it out. And people can't panic. I mean, we're Florida. We're used to hurricanes. There's no evacuation. And, you know, when our grandmothers drove our cars, the cars were getting 8 miles to the gallon. Now you're getting 30 to 40 miles a gallon. Mm. So if you multiply that out, how far you can actually drive on a car today, it's pretty substantial. But as most people don't realize, the biggest storage facility in the United States are people's cars. So when everyone rushes to the gas station, you know, usually they have about 5 or 6 day supply at the station of fuel. And when everybody goes and sucks it out, it puts a strain on the system.
Puts a strain on the system. So, yeah, don't panic, people. As Ned said, Ned Bowman, he's the executive director at the Florida Petroleum Marketers Association. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's our show, The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Andrea Padermo are producers. Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, Director of Radio Operations. Technical Director is Peter Mertz, with engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. And theme music by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next Friday at noon.